Flyover Politic Podcast, the show for normal Americans. From this undisclosed bunker, here's your host, Tony Reed.
Hi there, everyone. It's 4 o'clock in New York as we begin MSNBC's special coverage of Super Tuesday. Millions are headed to the polls in 16 states for what is the biggest day of voting, other than Election Day, of course, a moment after which Americans will have to face the fact that this is, in the words of a dear friend of this show, the "Do you want to have any more elections?" election, where voters are not just choosing between two candidates, but are making critical decisions about the very basic fundamentals of our democracy.
Yep. The president has been very clear. He's been very honest about his age. He knows that. He makes jokes about it, right? He makes jokes about his friend Jimmy Madison, right? He gets that. But this is also a president that has gotten done more in the last 3 years than most presidents have in their two terms of presidency. And that is what we've seen from the data.
In Pennsylvania, I have a message for you. Send me to Congress that I can support this right. And I promise you, if we take back Congress, we will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land. Last night, in the U.S. Capitol, the same building where our freedoms came under assault on July the 6th.
And welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast. It is the 10th of March, year of our Lord, 2024. Oh, what a hot fucking mess of a podcast we have today. We have the State of the Union. I had to start off with all of this. He's so full of fire. He's so good. He doesn't even know what he's running for office. We're going to be in a dictatorship if he doesn't win. So most of this podcast is going to be State of the Union. So I decided to put a block of just what our media is doing right now to get a Democrat who can't even form a complete sentence with a thesaurus and a dictionary. Not that the other guy's any better. He's talking about a bunch of crazy ass shit. I'm just saying, this motherfucker is a soup sandwich. So, we're going to go with CNN, Van Jones. A vote for Trump is for Russian tanks. The craziest moments on MSNBC for Tuesday's primetime. It's crazy. Joe Scarborough, fuck you if you don't think this is the greatest fucking Biden since liquid tied with bleach. Carl, a news guy, reassures the view that America's going to wake up. They're not going to vote for Trump. We're going to make sure of it. And the PBS guest goes full kook on the deadly, let me see what it says, deadly dangerous people in the fascist GOP. So we're still doing the fascist. Is the other side, not the side trying to stop everybody from voting and rigging elections. Okay.
And Van, what does President Biden need to do at this point to earn those Nikki Haley supporters, bring them into the fold? We saw the Biden campaign putting out a statement from President Biden almost immediately after Nikki Haley walked off that stage in South Carolina. What do you think?
I think he needs to talk to her donors and her supporters and say, if you want to, a year from now, watch Russian tanks rolling through Europe, then endorse Donald Trump and get on that bandwagon. But understand, you're going to wake up one morning and you're going to see horror across Europe, and you're going to have American soldiers, sailors, having to go over there and do something that we could have done with dollars. We're going to have to do with blood. If you want to continue to see the country being divided and unable to govern itself and treat itself well, get on that Trump train. But you've got a place over here. Now, he also, I think, needs to make a stronger case for what he is going to do to keep the economy moving in a good direction for people who go into grocery stores and can't pay for their groceries. He says he's going to sic the DOJ and the FTC on these grocers, these corporate grocers that are ripping off Americans. He needs to lean into that for the voters. But for the people like us who care about a democracy around the world, they have a binary choice. We're out of NATO and Russia is running over Europe, or you stand with Joe Biden.
sort of disconnect between a president that is a white working class guy himself and that keeps doing all of these things mm-hmm. that disproportionately benefit white working class Americans in red states, and their reaction to him is they hate him more. Like, the more he does, and it is because the most economically vulnerable voters tend to be young voters who tend to be more voters of color. They're economically vulnerable, and they tend to hold the president to account if they can't afford their lives or can't pay their student loans. They vote that way. Mm-hmm. But Republican voters don't vote that way. They don't vote based on economics or based on the benefits they're getting economically from the president. They're increasingly, from the Tea Party on, they're voting on race. They're voting on this idea of an invasion of brown people over the border, the idea that they can't get whatever job they want, a black person got it, therefore drive all the blacks out of the colleges, get rid of DEI. That is what they're voting on. They're yeah. just voting specifically on racial animus.
There's such a challenge for the Biden team, because as I've said here on the show over the past couple weeks, I've spent a good bit of time with Joe Biden. I've spent a couple of hours with Joe Biden, sitting, talking, going around the world as far as talking issues, talking the economy, talking inflation. And I must say, when I was talking to him, my thought wasn't, oh, poor guy. My thought was, oh, my God, I wish Dr. Brzezinski were off the on the other side of the table right now, because these two guys, I mean, 50 years of experience, and Joe Biden hasn't forgotten it. He may get pissed off at a press conference, and he may be thinking about the Mexican border deal and say Mexico instead of Egypt. He knows what he's talking about. He circles back around, gets to Egypt. He might misplace a word here and there, but you talk to him for hours at a time. Is he slower? Does he move slower? Yeah, he's moved slower. Is he stiffer? Yeah, he's moved stiffer. Does he have trouble walking sometimes? Yeah, so did FDR. We got out of the Depression. We won a GD war against Nazism and against the Japanese. But comparing that guy's mental state, I've said it for years now, he's cogent. Mm-hmm. But I undersold him when I said he was cogent. He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been intellectually, analytically, because he's been around for 50 years. And, you know, I don't know if people know this or not, Biden used to be a hothead. Sometimes that Irishman would get in front of the reasoning. Sometimes he would say things he didn't want to say. This is, and I don't really, you know what, I don't really care. Start your tape right now, because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. Not a close second.
Liable for sexual assault. Donald Trump is a yeah. uniquely unfit, unprincipled man. Yet the New York Times Siena polling from this weekend, prior ABC polling, has him beating Joe Biden head to head outside of the margin of error. Yeah. Is Joe Biden running scared enough? Because he had this quote where he said it kind of sounded like Trump's "I alone can fix it." I beat him before. I'm the best guy to do it again. Are they running scared enough?
Well, first of all, It's several recent polls. The current 538 averages all the mm-hmm. public polling, and Trump has a 2-point lead over Biden in national polls right now. Mm-hmm. If you go back exactly 4 years ago to Super Tuesday of 2020, Biden had a 2-point lead over. So he's starting, you know, certainly from a deficit. But first of all, don't, as you know this well, you don't put too much stock into what polls tell you today about how people are going to vote in November.
Yes.
We got back to that.
Say it again, Carl.
We got,
John Carl, say it again. Say it again.
Yeah. I mean,
Obama's disapproval rating was the same as, pretty much the same, and then he won.
And look, you do have that collective amnesia that we talked about. Democrats are going to be spending the next 8 months making sure people know exactly what Donald Trump is all about. And, you know, he's been kind of, you know, off in the shadows. I mean, there's been coverage of his criminal cases and everything. But we're at the beginning of a very long presidential campaign. Oh. And again, I'll say it again. Don't put much stock into what polls tell you today about how people will vote in November.
That's right.
It's exhausting.
If we did that, President Clinton would be preparing to hand the baton.
President Hillary Clinton?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. President Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Because polls all...
Do you think that President Biden put himself well-positioned, at least enough, in terms of saying the ball is in the Republicans' court, not mine right now?
I think that the part of the speech where he came to immigration, and I think by any objective view, he kind of began to get a little bit more convoluted and come out more less clearly, less strong than he did at the outset and at the end. I think that really shows what an Achilles heel that is. And unfortunately, if your electoral prospects, and I would argue more importantly, if the prospects of the continuation of the experimental experiment with self-governance, with having representatives who actually act in our interests, honor our freedom to vote, honor our freedom to decide for ourselves, basic things like whether and when we have kids, if the future prospects of this country hinge upon the American people, understand that this election is a confrontation between two different futures, one in which we will continue to be able to elect our leaders, cast our votes, have them counted, and in another in which this authoritarian faction will continue chipping away at every one of our freedoms. If you need people to understand that, you cannot say on one day, hey, these folks in Biden parlance are semi-fascists, and I promise to work with these semi-fascists. That is an electoral story that doesn't make sense. When you try this gambit of exposing them for their hypocrisy by unwittingly crediting them as good policymakers, you're undermining your overarching story, which I would argue is accurate, that these are deadly, dangerous people who do not have Americans' best interests at heart. There is a way to seize the upper hand on the immigration debate, and it comes from leading with our own values. And yes, calling out Republicans, but not by crediting their policy ideas, but rather by exposing how they are employing the oldest trick in the authoritarian book, which is to shame and blame a scapegoat, to tell people, look over there, your problems, it's because of those people, however that group is named and shamed. And they are doing that in order to get you to look the other way while they take away everything. Social Security, health care, living wages.
Okay, so let's do some cleanup on some things. We got Iranian assassins in the United States, but the border, there's no problem with the border, you fucking xenophobe. What the fuck is wrong with you, racist? We can just let our borders go, man. Those borders are so square. Yeah, Chinese motherfuckers, Iranian motherfuckers. There's motherfuckers all over the fucking place. This shit's out of control, bro. I mean, I'm serious. Why the fuck did I fight a war if we're just going to let all these cocksuckers get in? Eh? Anybody? Anybody? Is this mic on? What the fuck, dude? I don't understand this. None of this makes sense to me. It just didn't. None of it. Sometimes I just literally stare and go, what the fuck, man? How can we go from you need to have a border to we don't have a border and kids in cages to, we don't even fucking go down the border to see if there are kids in cages. Yeah, that's nice. Tied in there was actually MSNBC mocks immigration being the top issue, which we played last time, but I wanted to play it again because that's just scary shit, bro. The border is important, but is it? I don't know. Today I'm launching a strike force on unfair and illegal pricing and crackdown on corporations who break the law, keeping prices high for American consumers. Somebody said you should crack down on yourself. Record inflation against consumers occurred on your watch. Right. Most transparent in all time. Seeing some confusion about this document, CDC just released a document, myocarditis. They actually admitted it. And for those who knew the show and just stumbled on me, I fucking had it. I got COVID-D. I had complications from the Pfizer, which is now being proven to be the one. If you took Pfizer, you're fucked. Because it's the one that's fucking people up. Well, that's what we got because it was military. So all the military got that shit. And so I got digestive issues, but then when I went in to get my x-ray, they said my heart was like 6 times the normal size. They thought I was going to have a heart attack that day. They were freaked the fuck out. And that meant why I wasn't breathing. I had a hard time breathing. Everything was fucked. I didn't know what the fuck was happening. I collapsed. But yeah. Just made up. It's right-wing bullshit, man. Mm-hmm. This was one of my favorites this week. Atlantic writer saying that the reason why people aren't buying electric cars is because of Trump and shit. Let's do a fucking quick sampling of that. I forgot to play with my toy today. I think that's the ending of some game because I'm not a game person. That's bullshit, brah. People ain't buying them because they're too goddamn expensive. I went, and the only thing I could get was a Jetta. And it has automatic off, eco, it sips gas. I've already saved $100 in gas in 1 month from a V6 300 Chrysler. But we got everything we had in the Chrysler, but it was just in a smaller car, and we love it. It sips gas. It shuts the fuck off of the light. It's weird. At first, we're like, fuck that shit. This car's a piece of shit. But I took the test drive, and she said, when you stop, it's going to shut off. Oh. Because you don't know. It just, like, my shit broke. And then as the eco feature, which works the freaking transmission to do the most fuel efficient, literally 500 miles to the tank is what I got. Now, back in the day, I had a Jetta TDI for diesel. And I could go 550, but your gas one could only go about 400. I got 500 miles off a tank. That's fucking insane, man. That's just fucking insane. So I could get that. Because I need to save money and shit. But I couldn't find an electric car for under 60 grand. And they didn't have any on the lot. We still don't have cars anywhere, for fuck's sake. So, we had, and I'm about to go back, and I'm sorry, because I did this out of order, because I suck. We're going to play this soundbite. This was the Aral Ortiz, U.S. Border Chief, under President Biden, telling him to retire. Speak of the English. Listen to what he said about meeting with the president.
You don't just plant a flag just to plant a flag. It's got to be strategic, and it's got to make sense.
Raul Ortiz served as chief of the U.S. Border Patrol under President Biden and deputy chief under President Trump. He retired last year.
When agencies are making a decision based upon politics or whether they're going to get media coverage, hey, we're going to put all our personnel in this 2 mile stretch. What about the other 200 miles?
In our interview, Ortiz criticized Governor Abbott for not cooperating with the Border Patrol and playing politics with immigration. But he also expressed frustration with President Biden.
I've never had one conversation with the president or the vice president for that matter. And so I was the chief of the Border Patrol. I commanded 21,000 people. That's a problem.
I just saw 50 people today who had just crossed the border illegally. So something's not working.
We need to make sure that Central America, South America, Mexico, that those regions understand that if you pay a smuggler and you cross in between the ports of entry and you do not have a legitimate claim to some sort of asylum benefit, you're going to be sent back.
Do you believe that the White House has sent mixed messages to migrants?
Yeah, most definitely.
President Biden never apologized to the horseback Border Patrol agent he falsely accused of whipping Haitian migrants in Del Rio in 21. He promised consequences against them and said they would pay despite pushing a false narrative lengthy CBP investigation later debunked. Gonna have a hard time sleeping tonight. Internal email from Raul Ortiz, former Border Patrol chief on CBP leaders after Biden made comments on agents' actions because they knew it was wrong and they kept doing it. Yeah. But that's our world, man. This is the world we live in. It really fucking sucks dick. I can't stand it. Here is Biden's latest campaign ad tying Donald Trump to the KKK.
I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America into the future. The issue facing our nation isn't how old we are. It's how old are our ideas. Hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms. Where the middle class finally has a fair shot and the wealthy have to pay their fair share in taxes. I see a future where we save the planet from the climate crisis and our country from gun violence. Above all, I see a future for all Americans. I see a country for all Americans. And I will always be president for all Americans. So let's build the future together. Let's remember who we are. We are the United States of America.
If he's going to be shameless, which is his greatest asset, the shamelessness of him, is then Biden has to get in there very hard and go rapist, racist, fascist, over and over and over again. And then the trials are happening at the same time. He's just had to pay, he's just $93 million poorer right now, and just hammer it in with those three things. Rapist, racist, fascist.
But here's the thing.
Thank
voters,
you. That's my... That's
voters.
My.
So I added in there Karen Swisher, who is now saying unequivocally, just go dirty. That's all they could do. Go dirty, go dirty, go dirty, go dirty, go dirty, go dirty. Dirty, dirty, dirty. Riding dirty. Here's another one. Liz Cheney and Jay Sick committee concealed evidence that President Trump offered to send 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the U.S. Capitol. The offer was rejected by the D.C. mayor. They hid it because they needed it for a midterm. I mean, does anybody get surprised about this shit? It was put out ages ago, but now it's just finally making it to the media that they lied profusely about that. Just profusely. And once again, not a mega, not a anything. I'm just, what the fucking rat fuck is going on that we have zero standards on anything? I'm not playing this. This is the biggest thing that came out of the State of the Union, part of the media and stuff, is that he said illegal. And you can't fucking do that, man. That, no, Jack. Come on, Jack. Come on, Jack. So, this is a long soundbite. It is the best of the best of the worst of the State of the Union with our media, and it's going to be from every network, starting with MSNBC, warning we could be in a dictatorship next year. It's the second time. That's all they're saying over there. If you don't vote Biden, dictatorship.
And Michael, take a big picture, zoom out for us on what's at stake for him tonight. You point to FDR's For Freedom speech in 1941. Obviously, wartime, a bigger challenge. But let's talk about the challenges tonight.
Well, this is a real historical moment. We could be a dictatorship next year if Donald Trump is elected and carries through on his threats and carries through on his threats to suspend the Constitution. That's what's at stake. So Joe Biden could finesse it and talk about other things, or he could confront the elephant in the room and say, this is a year when we Americans have to choose whether we're going to live as a democracy, as a republic, or as an authoritarian system. That's what FDR was doing in 1941. Nazis, fascists, Imperial Japanese were rampaging around the world, and he said, you Americans have to choose. And also, for you Americans who think that we need to be fascist at home to compete with other fascist governments, which a lot of people were saying, he said, we need these four freedoms: freedom from want and fear, freedom of speech and religion.
And Susan, I want to talk to both of you about something we haven't seen, I don't think, anything this brutal since Lee Atwater back in 1988 with his campaign ad, which is that new super PAC ad, and it's all over the place, actually suggesting that Joe Biden will not survive another term, and also really demeaning the vice president. Susan, you first.
We've never seen routinely this kind of brutality in political ads, that sort of attack. But brace yourself, because I think...
John, it was very striking, taking on Donald Trump, but not by name. How many times did he say predecessor tonight?
Hey, look, this was a great night for Joe Biden, and this was much more a campaign speech than a State of the Union address. And you saw that in how he repeatedly took on Donald Trump. By my count, by our count, 16 times did he either say my predecessor, the former president, or other people my age, referring to Donald Trump. Very direct attacks, the most powerful one, the very first one, when he comes out and he first invokes Ronald Reagan, who told the Russians, who told the Soviets, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, and then he said, compared to Donald Trump, who tells Putin, do whatever the hell you want. Very pointed, the kind of campaign style speech you just never have seen in a State of the Union, but I think very effective.
You say a lot of Democrats over the past few weeks have been panicking. I'll bet the vast majority of them feel better tonight, because the president did hit hard. You know, you can talk about his performance all you want, but I think more importantly, what he hit. This was the old-time religion, the middle class, working class, labor, Democrat agenda. And he reached for it again and again and again, both in terms of the values, that line, you can't love your country only when you win. The best line of the speech. Fair play and decency are bedrock values of the middle class. No matter who people voted for, the notion that you don't love your country if you guys lose, it doesn't sit well with them. And then right across that economic agenda, hitting again and again and again.
It did get raucous in the chamber at times. The president sparred with the GOP. Lawmakers shouted at him as he spoke as well.
This was a feisty speech that at times felt more like a rowdy campaign event than a traditional State of the Union address. The president, well aware of the stakes, pitted his message directly against Donald Trump's, repeatedly sparring with Republicans in the room in a way we've never really seen before. The president trying to show voters he is ready for a fight and has what it takes to serve another 4 years.
Overnight, a fiery President Biden kicking off the general election. Biden framing this moment as a fight for freedom and the nation's democracy.
Now, the White House is thrilled with the president's performance. They feel he was fiery and tough, that he landed his punches and pushed back successfully against his critics. But this was a well-planned and rehearsed speech. So the question now, can the president keep this up? Will he bring this fire to the campaign trail?
House Speaker Mike Johnson, what a decorum and civility inside of the chamber last night. That did not happen. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene was rowdy at times, downright combative. You saw her there breaking the House rules to wear that Make America a great again hat in support of Donald Trump. She repeatedly booed the president, called him a liar. In the back of the chamber, we spotted Congressman Troy Nehls standing up wearing a shirt with Trump's mugshot on it. But guys, I got to tell you, the heckling inside of the chamber during these addresses really starting to become a pattern. Guys.
Yeah, distraction and a pattern. But George, this was the biggest audience the president is possibly going to have between now and the election. What did he need to accomplish, and do you think he did it?
I think he achieved the two biggest things he needed to do. One, I think he addressed this age issue with his aggressive, feisty, ad-lib delivery. I think that helped him. Secondly, he drew that sharp contrast with Donald Trump and the Republicans, reminding voters.
Nancy Cordes is our chief White House correspondent, and Nancy, you cover this president closely. He's been criticized for sometimes flubbing a speech, going off script. Tonight was a bit different.
Nora, this seemed to me to be a speech designed first and foremost to show that Joe Biden has the stamina and the fire in the belly to go another 4 years. It was designed to be delivered with high energy. He even broke into a call and response at one point, and Democratic lawmakers played along. He told jokes. But he came out of the gate criticizing Donald Trump on Ukraine and then on January 6th. That was unexpected. He accused him of unleashing chaos when it comes to reproductive rights, of pandering to Vladimir Putin. It seemed to me that this White House understood that one of the biggest obstacles to reelection for him are the persistent voter questions about the president's age. And the White House set out to try to address those questions with a speech in which he...
This was his How About Them Apples speech for me. I mean, we've watched this before. I think that grabbing the room by, you know, he started with World War II and the Civil War and rooted the threat facing our country from my predecessor in those two epic battles, and then he quoted Ronald Reagan. It was like a punch in the face to every Republican in the room, and that's how it started. This is the first 120 seconds. Every Republican, he's rooted tonight's address in the Civil War, World War II, and then quoted Reagan. It is a punch in the nose. It's why by the end, Lindsey Graham was slouched in his seat with his arm folded, chuckling like it was John McCain up there. I mean, the sort of, waving of the white flag by the, I mean, Mike Johnson's face, I think, told the whole story. And I think that, they will be attacking him by, I'm sure they are right now, or they will by 11:15 on Fox News. But everybody knows that this was a great speech. And everybody knows that if this is the message going into, the next 8 months, that polls will soon reflect that, and this will be a real, real fight. I think taking on his own age three times in the end shows not just Republicans but Democrats he's not afraid of defending his stature.
And he said,
and his
I've
status.
Been in my career, I've been called too young, and I've been
he
called
makes
too
three
old.
References by the end of his age. And then I think the abortion debate has already been won, and I agree by taking on the Supreme Court. He's ready to.
President Biden delivering a mix of energy, humor, combativeness, as well as plenty of ad-libs directed at his Republican critics.
From President Biden, a feisty State of the Union address, relishing the back and forth with Republicans, the president acknowledging his age and using it to deliver a political point.
Democrats are breathing a sigh of relief. They are thrilled. One Democrat told me this performance was a total 10 because the president was strong, because he was energetic, because he took on Donald Trump within the first 4 minutes of starting this speech, Savannah. And what are Republicans criticizing him on this morning? They say he was too partisan. They're not criticizing him for a lack of energy. This is significant, Savannah, because this is the type of moment that throws out red meat to the base and also appeals to those Nikki Haley moderate independent voters. So it allows him to straddle the line. And again, I think this is going to be a rallying cry out on the campaign trail. And he's trying to flip the script on Republicans who've owned the issue of immigration.
Yesterday, a day when the stock market was hitting record highs, the president was not on Wall Street. The president was at the kitchen table on Main Street trying to show people, I feel your pain. I know you feel like you've been nickeled and dimed. This is what we've been doing over the past year. Look, let's talk about tax fairness. Maybe these big corporations and these people who make $100 million or more a year should be paying a higher tax rate than you are. And a lot of people yesterday were telling me that they think that immigration and abortion could be the two really important things that drive people in the ballot box. Maybe it won't be the economy. Maybe this will not be an economy election.
The president appeared energized, delivering a pointed and at times combative address, taking more than a dozen swipes at Donald Trump.
The president looking to demonstrate he has the vigor and vision to serve another 4 years, and sharply critiquing his likely Republican challenger, hitting him on Russia, January 6th.
The president appeared, pretty fired up as he went on the offensive on big issues like Roe v. Wade and the border and the economy. And some of those issues were on display inside the chamber. Many Democratic female lawmakers were dressed in white to show support for reproductive rights. And then outside the Capitol, protesters blocked some streets calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. During the speech, the president repeatedly slammed his predecessor. Donald Trump, though, did not mention Donald Trump by name. Nancy Cordes has been following it all. She's at the White House for us this morning. Nancy, I got to think they're feeling pretty good about this speech last night.
They certainly did a victory lap last night, Tony. Good morning to you. Good morning, everyone. The speech was more combative than we had been led to expect here at the White House. He brought up his Republican opponent at least a dozen times in an address that was clearly designed to show that the president has the energy, the fire in the belly to serve another 4 years.
With re-election on the line, an animated President Biden came out of the gate swinging.
But today there's words like fiery to describe it. So did he meet the moment?
Well, he met the moment in part because of that hand-wringing, right? Expectations were in the sub-basement. But what's interesting is that the White House was saying it's going to be a fiery, energetic speech, leaning into basically theater review, right? Which is, it has nothing to do with policies or any of that stuff, but they bought into it, got everybody to pay attention. And then, as Nancy said, he laid out the argument for the fall campaign. It has two components. One is his predecessor as a threat to democracy. He then also got into a populist fight on economic policy with Donald Trump, essentially saying we need to raise corporate taxes and tax the wealthy in order to pay for things to help people to have access to opportunity in America. That's his campaign. And laid it out pretty effectively, I think. Biden was baiting them, too. I mean, he wanted that contract.
There was a little bit of trolling, I thought.
Yeah, no, I mean...
It was the greatest fucking State of the Union ever performed by a president on the planet Earth. or Mars. The greatest. If you don't believe that, you're a fucking communist. You fucking communist. It was weaker than fucking nickel pack of Kool-Aid in the ocean. No color, no flavor, no scent. I mean, that fucking shit was weak, bro. It's a repeat of everything. Why do I know that? Well, here's the last three State of the Unions. Tell me it's not the same fucking thing.
For too many decades, we imported projects and exported jobs. Now, thanks to what you've all done, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Now, instead of importing foreign products and exporting American jobs, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Build the economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down. To build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down. Building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down. We're the only nation on earth that has always turned every crisis we faced into an opportunity. We're the only country that has emerged from every crisis we've ever entered stronger than we got into it. This year, COVID-19 no longer need control our lives. Today, COVID no longer controls our lives. The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The only nation that can be defined by a single word, possibilities. Actually, I can define it in one word, and I mean this, possibilities. Possibilities. I'm a capitalist. Look, I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. Let's pass the PRO Act. Pass the PRO Act. Pass the PRO Act and extend the child tax credit. And let's restore the full child tax credit. Restore that child tax credit. If you travel 20 miles east of Columbus, Ohio, you'll see a field of dreams. Outside of Columbus, Ohio, on 1,000 acres, literally a field of dreams, our infrastructure is ranked 13th in the world. Used to be number one in the world in infrastructure. We've sunk to 13th in the world. Began to replace the poisonous lead pipes so every child, every American has clean water to drink at home and at school. We're also replacing poisonous lead pipes. Removing poisonous lead pipes so every child can drink clean water without risk of brain damage. We're gonna do it by buying America. Buy American products. We're gonna buy American. We're gonna buy America. Buy America. The American Rescue Plan helped working people and left no one behind. We're building an economy where no one's left behind. We leave no one behind. I get it. I get it. I get it. We pay more for the same drug produced by the same company in America than any other country in the world. You know, we pay more for prescription drugs than any nation in the world. Americans pay more for prescription drugs than anywhere in the world. Insulin costs about $10 a vial to make. It costs the drug companies roughly $10 a vial to make that insulin. Let's cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month. Let's cap the cost of insulin for everybody at $35. I want to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for every American who needs it. We'll build a national network of 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. We're going to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. The IBEW work is building and installing 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. We'd all agree that the present tax system ain't fair. The tax system is not fair. It is not fair. Does anybody really think the tax code is fair? 55 of the Fortune 500 companies earned $40 billion in profit and paid zero in federal taxes. 55 of the largest corporations in America, the Fortune 500, made $40 billion in profits and paid zero in federal taxes. 55 of the biggest companies in America made $40 billion and paid zero in federal income tax, zero. Ban targeted advertising to children. Ban targeted advertising to children. Under my plan, nobody, let me say this again, nobody earning less than $400,000 a year will pay an additional penny in new taxes. Not a single penny. Under my plans, as long as I'm president, nobody earning less than $400,000 will pay an additional penny in taxes. Nobody, not one penny. Nobody earning less than $400,000 a year will pay an additional penny in federal taxes. Nobody, not one penny. But let's make corporations and wealthy Americans start paying their fair share. It's not by making sure that the wealthy and big corporations pay their fair share. By making big corporations and very wealthy finally beginning to pay their fair share. The watchdogs are back. The watchdogs are back. Ban assault weapons with high-capacity magazines that hold up to 100 rounds. Ban assault weapons now. Ban them now. I'm demanding a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Children were also struggling before the pandemic, bullying, violence, trauma. When millions of young people are struggling with bullying, violence, trauma, we need to secure our border and fix the immigration system. I'll at least pass my plan to provide the equipment and officers to secure the border. I introduced a comprehensive bill to fix our immigration system, secure the border. provide a pathway to citizenship for dreamers. And a pathway to citizenship for dreamers. Provide a pathway to citizenship for dreamers. Let's finally get the Bipartisan Equality Act. Let's also pass the Bipartisan Equality Act. Pass the Equality Act. It's never been a good bet to bet against the American people. It's never, ever been a good bet to bet against America. Never. Let's end cancer as we know it. Let's end cancer as we know it. Like end cancer as we know it. I've come to report on the state of the nation, the state of the union. And my report is this. The state of the union is strong because you, the American people, are strong. The state of the union is strong. That tonight, we can proudly say...
But it was the greatest fucking ever, and we're not going to say it's repetitive. Why would we do that? It was so media-centric. It's no different than any other Democrat we have. Damage control from CNN the times he did fuck up, and then PBS saying Republicans were not listening. And I'm not going to play because I played enough, but that's what they went with. Republicans weren't listening to that excellent speech because they're fucktards. Do you remember the booze and ripping up fucking State of the Union? Do you remember this shit? I mean, it was just fucking 4 years ago, yo. So you're telling me Democrats are like standing there like, oh, I listen to everything that president says. No, they fucking don't. God damn, man. I mean, even to fucking say that is so comedic. I mean, are you serious? Come on, brah. But there were criticism from the left a little bit. We got Nancy Pelosi saying he should have said illegal or undocumented, not illegal. And we're going to play a few. I think this is. Oh, shit. I hope I'm right on this. Yeah, this is the Gold Star guy who, by the way, got arrested for interrupting the State of the Union, which the Dems did all the time for Trump.
Dan.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing, okay? What's the big thing about
it? I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment, but you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented. Uh-huh. He said...
All Americans deserve the freedom to be safe, and America is safer today than when I took office. Year before I took office, murder rates went up 30%. 30% they went up. The biggest increase in history. It was then, through my American Rescue Plan, which every American voted against, I might add.
I was wrong. That was a hot mic, and then him lying about the rescue plan, which wasn't a plan or rescue. But once again, another hot mic. The media won't go with it. I'm not going to play him getting booted out. The optics appear to be that pro-Hamas protesters get to block traffic with impunity, and Gold Star parents are led away in handcuffs. And let me see. Right there. They blocked the motorcade. They did not get arrested. A Gold Star father who got up was a fucking arrested. Here's him getting heckled. Oh, I did play it. I'm sorry. I did play it. That was that soundbite right there. I'm sorry, I couldn't remember who it was. He ran up to me and started talking about his son. That isn't your son. This is about my son, Gold Star Mother Lance Corporal Kareem Jekyll. These people are getting ignored by the media. Nobody wants to fucking listen to them. And then there's just ads everywhere that nobody will play. This one was Building American Future. And then there's a bunch in this new package, I think coming from the RNC, that I'm going to edit down. But it's all the ads going towards Biden that if you pay attention... Nope. I gotta mark these, man. I don't know which one's which. What the fuck, Chuck? I got a ding in here somewhere. Where's Dan? There we go. No, that's not it. No. There we go. That's it. Din din. I'll work on that. Get it better.
Lake and Riley should have been able to go on a run in broad daylight without being murdered by an illegal immigrant. But Joe Biden promised not to deport illegal immigrants.
Should that person be deported? That person should not be the focus of deportation.
Biden vowed not to detain illegal immigrants who crossed the border.
No one would be put in jail while waiting for their hearing.
So when Jose Ibarra crossed into America illegally, he was not deported. He was not put in jail. Biden also supported sanctuary cities.
Should undocumented immigrants arrested by local police be turned over to immigration officials?
No.
So when Jose Ibarra was arrested in New York City for endangering a child, he was freed a second time. Ibarra went to Georgia, where he beat Lake and Riley to death. How many?
I guess I should clear my mind here a little bit.
We can all see Joe Biden's weakness. If Biden wins, can he even survive till 2029? The real question is, can we make a...
And my report is this. The State of the Union is strong. You should come. Surge to the border.
Migrants surge across from Mexico.
Pushing resources to the limit.
Some of those spot part of the terror watch list.
Every state is a border state. Every city is a border city.
Sharp rise in the amount of drugs.
8,500 pounds of fentanyl.
Cartel controls everything that happens here.
America is at a breaking point.
Joe Biden is touting Bidenomics.
Bidenomics is working.
78% of voters view the economy negatively.
And that the president is to blame.
We're changing people's lives.
Unrelenting price increases.
Sticker shock is hitting millions of Americans hard.
The highest economic growth in 40 years.
The highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that.
Crime is dominating the headlines.
Surge of violent smash and grab robberies.
24% more murders.
The buck stops with me.
The Middle East in flames. Israel has formally declared war.
The Taliban has returned to power. Embassy shuttered. The flag coming down.
Vladimir Putin doesn't fear this president.
Xi Jinping told President Biden China will reunify with Taiwan.
Weakness invites aggression.
Appeasement has failed.
This open season on America.
The country has soured on Joe Biden.
The most vacation days taken by a president.
The White House in damage control.
Where is the president? Why isn't he communicating?
There's a pattern we're seeing all across the country now. We're seeing violent crimes committed by illegal aliens that Joe Biden released.
I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum.
An illegal immigrant charged with the murder of a 22-year-old Georgia nursing student, Lake and Riley.
Jose Ibarra, her accused killer, came to the U.S. illegally from Venezuela.
Whether it is Lake and Riley or whether it is Jeremy Caceres, a 2-year-old boy who was murdered just outside Washington, D.C. by another illegal alien that Biden released. In recent days, a 14-year-old girl in Boston raped by an illegal alien Biden released. A child under 14 raped by an illegal alien in Louisiana that Biden released. When you release violent criminals into our community, Americans are going to be killed.
There are so many fucking angles they can do for Biden and company. It's that first one by Building America Future. CNN refused to fucking play it. They will not even play it because it's too factual. They can't refute it. It's the truth. There's people getting killed all over the fucking country because of Biden and company. We don't even track it. So they can always come back in the media and lie and say, oh, there's not that crime. Crime's worse than the red state. Well, you can say all you want. It's because we don't track illegal immigrant crime. Only Arizona does and Texas. Nobody else does. California don't. Our state doesn't. The people yapping for so long about Biden not being up to the job look pretty dumb this morning. He read words from a teleprompter, and the one time he deviated from, he screwed up the name of a murder victim. Rob Reiner, we're watching our current and future president speak the truth in clarity and strength. So proud of President Biden's Republican under the thumb of Trump are an embarrassment. When you can't even applaud America's success, you have no business serving in Congress. Nah, shut the fuck up. Media types clearly in the tank for Biden. Do yourself a favor and search X for Biden and Fury, some of the hits you get. This was an angry political speech. The media is reframing it for the White House. By AP, Fury, CNBC, Fury, MSNBC, Fury, New York Times, Fury, 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 Fury. I remember the words dystopian used for Trump, who did a similar speech. And just in case you think I'm fucking making it up, I'm going to play this. This happened before, and the media didn't even cover it. But you know they would cover it if it was Trump. They would say, look at the world. They think Trump's a fucking piece of shit. If his motorcade got hijacked. Once again, you just see the media sitting there going, hey, what's up, man? Where is a peaceful protest? This is America. This isn't AstroTurf. This is grassroots. Then The View, of course, because The View is a bunch of fucking hateful cunts. And I said it. Sorry, it's not professional. Shouldn't say that, but that's the best words I can come up with. Now they go after the GOP's rebuttal with Congressman Britt.
Some medication, Katie. I haven't seen acting that bad since my wedding night. So, which genius in that party decided that she was the perfect spokesperson? I've never seen mood swings like this. One minute she's like, then she's like, I'm gonna take a knife and stab you. Then she's laughing like an idiot. I mean, what's wrong with her? She's like Sybil.
A disaster from start to finish. And actually, Katie Britt is somebody who's a serious person with policy chops. Democratic senators will tell you they respect her. But it's Women's History Month. It's International Women's Day. And we put the senator in the kitchen. Like, women can be wives. They can be moms. They don't, we're in front of a podium. I mean, I was hearing from Republican women everywhere, like, why did they choose us? Why did she not say, put me anywhere else?
What is she auditioning for, though? Because I don't think she's going to get a call back.
And no. I think they were thinking Ronald Reagan, like, all great change in America happens at the dinner table, but instead it gave, like, creepy Lifetime
movies. The girl needs mood elevators.
Yeah,
I don't even know how you were able to notice she was in a kitchen, because I was so incredibly distracted by what I was watching, right? And I'm And the only thing that worried me about her being in a kitchen is that she had knives so close by. Because I thought she could go Chucky on me at any time. You know, when she started, it was giving me like a Real Housewives confessional vibe.
It was very sad.
And then it went from Real Housewives confessional having a, you know, breakdown to Sybil, the movie from 76 about a lady with multiple personality disorder. And I'm thinking to myself, this lady shouldn't be in a kitchen. She should be in a padded room.
Let me just say this.
Hit it.
You know, it was giving like she wanted to call the manager on America. You know what I mean?
Karen.
It was giving that to me.
Say Karen, why not?
Yeah, no, you can't say that.
Why not?
So it was giving me fragility. It was giving me those tears that are often weaponized. It was giving me what the young people are calling the trad wife or the trad.
Everything is racist. Everything is racist according to me. Everything is racist.
The United States has a population of north of 327 million people. Why do we need more kids? Are you saying the state of Alabama needs more kids? Why does the state of Alabama need more kids? More kids for what? There was a time when the state of Alabama absolutely needed more kids because, you know, Alabama was a slave state. Are you saying the state of Alabama needs more kids because you think that those populations will include people who are maybe destitute and desperate enough if you kick out the immigrants like a lot of y'all want to do and you could make them do the work that the migrants are doing now? Because that kind of sounds slavery-ish.
That.
All right, we went straight on into our Everything is Racist. It's a woke section, but I had to play that stuff. They're just fucking God, Joy Reid. How is she still on the air? Does anybody ever think about that? Meet Rose Johnson, a 6'2 male competing today in the semifinals of his school's girls' basketball team. He previously elbowed a girl to the side of her face, nearly giving her a concussion, which benched her for the rest of the game. How many more girls have to be injured to stop this insanity? That is not even remotely a feminine person. I'm sorry. You just... come on, folks. Senate Appropriation Committee released a spending bill that would be voted on tomorrow, include $1 million of your tax dollars to go towards renovating an LGBTQ center in Pennsylvania, which boasts rooms to try BDSM and sex fetishes and host sex kink parties. There's even a kink party happening there this weekend. Really? That's what we're doing. Really? Come the fuck on, man. Why do we have to finance that shit? So here's our trans bump. We got CBS Morning Fonz over mathematician drag queen and two from Libs of TikTok.
Drag queen and self-described math queen, Kyne Santos went viral on TikTok with her math riddles and explainers. Her videos have attracted millions of views. Santos's new book called Math in Drag, she investigates mathematical mysteries all while educating about the art of drag. You write that math is a lot like drag. How so?
Yeah, you know, people think that these are two such separate worlds. You know, math is all about rules and getting the right answer. Drag is art and art has no rules. But really, the book is about all the ways that they overlap. And really, the higher level math is about thinking creatively and, you know, questioning rules and stereotypes.
Well, you say math and drag, they're both marvelous, whimsical, controversial, and never boring. So you started putting up these videos as a fun thing for yourself to do. And what happened?
Yeah, I mean, math was always my favorite subject. I happen to also be a drag queen. And I started just making these videos, telling people riddles and sharing math because I want other people to experience the joys of math as well.
But it caused some controversy though, Kyne, because people said, I don't know if she is the right person to be bringing math to kids. And to that you say what?
Anybody can study math. Doesn't matter what you look like. Mm-hmm. All that matters is what's in your head.
Yeah. So why is the education system in this country apparently failing kids so much when it comes to math? Why is the math not in our kids' heads?
You know, the way we teach teach math in schools, it's just all about memorization, getting the right answers, thinking like a calculator. But, you know, mathematicians don't have to think like a calculator. They have to be creative. They have to think innovatively, and they have to collaborate and work together. And that's not what we're doing in classrooms.
You're one of these math is beautiful people, aren't you?
Yes, because you embrace yourself and you really celebrate who you are and how you do what you do.
Well, I think when I was young, I didn't really know much about drag. It was sort of mysterious to me. But, you know, watching shows like RuPaul's Drag Race opened my mind up to, you know, drag queens just being artists.
Yeah.
And you see math in everything.
Yes.
Like, for instance?
Like, for instance, this dress.
How so?
You know, you can take, if you want to sew a dress like this, you want to use pi, which is the relationship between the circumference, your waistline, and the diameter, which is the length of fabric that you need to cut.
That's so interesting. You're utilizing pi, but also laying off the pi to fit.
No doubt. So what I got in that beautiful dress. I like this book because it's able to make information digestible that at sometimes, to kids and adults, can seem daunting. Was that the point, to make math a little bit more digestible?
Yeah, this book is for people like you, for people who aren't, you know, self-described math people. This isn't a textbook. It's,
does my daughter attend this school's LGBTQ club? What's her name? Hannah Watson? No one named Hannah Watson attends the LGBTQ club. Call down and check, please. Hi, Ms. Grayson. Does a Hannah Watson attend your LGBTQ club? Okay, thank you. Well, no one by the name of Hannah Watson attends the LGBTQ club. Fine. Have you checked the Bible study club? That's where she's supposed to be. She's probably there. Why don't you head down there and I'll buzz you in? Okay. Ms. Grayson, send Quinn to the room where the Bible study meets. Her mom is heading down there right now.
Happy National Reading Day.
Today, we are reading Introducing Teddy,
a gentle story about gender and friendship.
It was written by Jessica Walton and illustrated by Dougal McPherson.
Errol and Thomas the Teddy play together every day.
They ride their bike in the backyard.
They plant vegetables in the garden.
They have sandwiches for lunch in the treehouse.
And they have tea parties inside when it's raining. One day, Errol woke to find the sun shining through his bedroom window.
Hooray! He shouted. Come on, Thomas, let's go to the park and play. Thomas the Teddy
didn't feel like playing.
You seem sad today, Thomas, said Errol. Don't worry, the park will cheer you up.
Thomas the Teddy wasn't so sure.
Oh no, even the swing isn't working.
What's wrong, Thomas? Talk to me.
If I tell you, said Thomas,
you might not be my friend anymore. Thomas is equal looking.
I will always be your friend, Thomas.
Thomas the Teddy took a deep breath.
I need to be myself, Errol.
In my heart, I've always known that I'm a girl Teddy, not a boy Teddy.
I wish my name was Tilly,
not Thomas.
Is that why you've been so sad? Errol asked. I don't care if you're a girl Teddy or a boy Teddy. What matters is that you are my friend.
You're the best friend a bear could have, said Tilly.
Now that you're feeling better, said Errol,
let's call our friend Ava.
Hi, Ava. Teddy and I are at the park. You want to come and play?
Sure, Errol. Let me just finish building my robot.
Ava believes in STEM, which is great. Hi, Errol. Hi, Thomas. Ava called out as she sped toward them.
Hi, Ava, said Errol. Teddy has a new name.
Let me introduce you to Tilly.
What a great name, said Ava. Let's go play, Tilly.
Wait, I've just moved in my bow tie, said Tilly the Teddy.
I've always wanted a bow instead.
Good for you, Tilly. Wear whatever makes you happy, said Ava. I think I'll get rid of my bow.
I like my hair free.
Errol, Ava, and Tilly played all morning until it was time to go home.
See you at our next tea party, Errol said as Ava stepped onto her scooter. Yes, see you there.
I'm bringing a friend, Ava yelled as she sped away.
Errol and Tilly the Teddy play together every day.
They ride their bike in the backyard.
They plant vegetables in the garden.
They have sandwiches for lunch in the treehouse.
And they have tea parties inside when it's raining.
Little robot.
This is Tilly.
Yeah, they're just never going to get it on those books. It isn't fucking transphobic. It's just kids, man. You can't be racist against white people. This person is Kotaku senior editor. J.K. Rowling might be arrested for a hate crime because she misgendered somebody. That's how far they're going overseas. We're actually pretty lucky on this. Happy International Women's Day from all the transgenders. Okay. CBS and Walgreens are now selling abortion pills. That's nice. Well, that slide's fucked up. Let's get this bad boy up. There we go. A federal judge in Texas has ordered a 55-year-old U.S. agency that caters to minority-owned businesses to serve people regardless of race, siding with the white business owner, who claimed the program discriminated against them. What would they do with DEI? Seriously. Breaking! A woman has been convicted by a Portland, Oregon jury of criminal harassment and a hate crime after she misgendered and confronted a trans person using the woman's bathroom. Cassandra McIntyre told Leah Larson, picture below, a far-left trans activist, to get the fuck out. So let's... I'm literally gonna blow this up so that we can actually see. Come on. I hate when it does this. That's the dude. It's a dude. It's not a trans person. It's just not. Professor, universities are unprepared for a GOP administration that will defund grievance studies. Chayak Ryak, I don't know how to say her name right, said she'll visit Oklahoma, a state that's still grieving next Bennett's death. Parents and allies of two-spirit, trans, non-binary, gender expansion youth, a message for you. You're not welcome in Oklahoma. So we are going to freaking do what? Threaten her? Beat her up? What's what we usually do? Trans golfer Haley Davidson banned from women's pro golf tour. Let's look at the picture. That's a dude that could not win as a dude, so he went trans. Another British guy. 2 years in jail over anti-immigration stickers. We will be a minority in our homeland by 2066. VA tried to ban the iconic WW2 kissing photo because unequivocally offensive, because it's not black people. And then I just wanted to bring up one last time this WPATH report. You need to read this. If you're going to argue with people online, they're actually admitting that none of this fucking shit works. None of it. It's all horse manure. Horse manure. So, to close out this and go into a TikTok segment. Soundbite on Sweet Baby Inc. We're going to TikTok and the major media not saying that TikTok threatening suicide and murder of lawmakers. TikTok users are, and they're not doing anything about it.
Mass firings are taking place in the tech industry at large, and Nintendo notwithstanding, in the video game industry in particular, and the industry's commitment to DEI is one of the major reasons for this collapse. Now, the backlash is starting to hit those enforcing and implementing these toxic ESG policies, and they're none too pleased about it. There are many reasons why tech at large, and video gaming in particular, is in something of a crisis. Bloat and the completely unneeded expenses that come with that is a big one, and that is a problem entirely of the industry's own making. But on top of that, the video game industry has been all too eager to adopt the S in ESG, which in turn spells DEI. This has not only made the bloat problem worse and contributed towards rising costs across the board, it has also made the end product, the games themselves, more divisive and exclusionary, driving the paying customers away. And that, in a nutshell, is what corporate ESG and DEI does: increase production costs while also decreasing revenue. Yet, the big video game studios spared no expense in adopting it, and they even paid extortionary sums to third-party consulting agencies that helped them implement the very policies that would drive customers away. There are others, but the most famous of such consulting agencies is Sweet Baby Inc., the company whose creative interference, or input as they would call it themselves, was so disastrous to Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League that it was highlighted in the Warner earnings call, and its failure will have severe repercussions for developer Rocksteady, and well-earned ones at that. This failure also made Sweet Baby Inc. a household name among gamers at large, which, as we're about to see, has gamers organizing to find other games Sweet Baby Inc. worked on so that they may be boycotted. But before we get to that, let's see exactly what it is that Sweet Baby Inc. does in the name of ESG and DEI, and how incredibly damaging they are to the creative process, and let's do that by seeing what they themselves say that they do on their webpage. Their About Us page reads: Founded in 2018, Sweet Baby Inc. is a narrative development and consultation studio based in Montreal in the People's Republic of Canada and working around the globe. Our mission is to tell better, more empathetic stories while diversifying and enriching the video game industry. We aim to make games more engaging, more fun, more meaningful, and more inclusive for everyone. That's a lot of Orwellian 1984-style doublespeak right there. Let's see how they aim to achieve these wonders, and they do that by revealing their approach. After having been contracted for the job, they will presumably demand a copy of the game document, which is basically the blueprint for the finished game, which describes the story, the characters, the level design, and game mechanics. With this in hand, Sweet Baby Inc. will set to work. We begin with an all-hands review and discussion of the project material. Everyone at Sweet Baby sees your project and shares their thoughts, feelings, and ideas. Feelings are a big part of this, because the unspoken goal here is that every one of Sweet Baby Inc.'s overtly sensitive employees, who are in the perpetual state of victimhood, end up feeling safe and seen in the final product. Then, and only then, will they feel good about it. They continue. We do this because it kicks the project off with a multitude of perspectives, beginning a conversation that ensures the work is richer and more resonant before it's even put to paper. We then create and complete narrative deliverables by keeping the player in mind, with a focus on user experience and emotional design. We aim to consult with honesty, transparency, and a conversational approach to help find the best direction for your project. Yeah, not much data-driven advice to be found there. But does it strike anyone just how intrusive this is? This isn't Sweet Baby Inc. just offering some advice on how to score some additional DEI brownie points in a game that is already mostly visualized and mapped out by professional game developers who know what they're doing. No, this is Sweet Baby Inc. practically dictating every facet of the game from the ground up. And indeed, going further down the site, they make it clear that they'll micromanage the story and narrative in ways that make it all about representation, about which they write, "We believe that representation is key to connecting players and audiences." Well, I'm glad they stated right off the bat that this is their belief, because there's absolutely no objective, testable evidence whatsoever to suggest that this belief in any way is grounded in reality. On the contrary, recent developments both in gaming, comics, and on the big and small screen suggest that, if anything, the opposite may be the case. So for any game developer out there contemplating hiring Sweet Baby Inc., or indeed any other company like them, take heed that you are hiring a company that will be changing your game in accordance with their beliefs, i.e. their religion. And then you better pray that your audience will still respond to it afterwards, because a Hail Mary is all you'll have at that point. Their pitch continues. We're part of an inclusive and knowledgeable community of diverse consultants, able to cover a wide range of cultural and sensitivity topics. We know nothing about making video games, though. It doesn't actually say that, but it's kind of hinted at between the lines. Our approach leads with the creation of joy in marginalized players and seeks to be additive rather than strictly corrective. In other words, they seek to create joy in the smallest of minorities that may not even be into the game in question in the first place. And then they're just gonna assume that whatever has been done to bring joy to the smallest of minorities that may not be into gaming in the first place will still create equal joy among the core target audience of actual paying gamers, while offering zero, absolutely zero evidence that one follows from the other. In fact, the one thing not present anywhere on this whole page is any evidence of any kind suggesting that employing the services of Sweet Baby Inc. will translate to increased sales, which obviously it won't, because as anyone of sound mind can plainly see, the only thing this borderline religiously driven company does is ruin what otherwise might have been good games from the ground up. But then again, that destruction is what DEI is ultimately all about. What boggles the mind is that so many for-profit game companies actually fell for this scam, and quite a few have. Under projects, Sweet Baby Inc. proudly listed games they've been working on, as well as their commercial partners, quite a few of whom are companies that right now are financially struggling and in a position where they need to fire their staff by the thousands. Which is hardly surprising, considering that these companies are so poorly managed that they hired Sweet Baby Inc. in the first place. Because these companies and properties are public, a Steam tracker was created listing games that Sweet Baby Inc. has worked on, recommending that you steer clear of these games. And a number of Sweet Baby Inc. employees saw this, had a meltdown about it on X, and then, in keeping with being the commies they are, they tried to have both the tracker and its creator cancelled. The end result of that, as was diligently covered both by Fandom Pulse and Bounding Into Comics, links to both of their write-ups which complement each other beautifully are in the description. Not only did this cancellation attempt fail, proving that the Streisand effect is real, they signal boosted this tracker in a major way, both directly and indirectly helping it growing from nothing till, at the time of making this video, nearly 100,000 followers. And that's a good thing. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League wasn't a fluke. It was simply the end result of the video game industry embracing the DEI aspect of ESG, and gamers rightfully voted against it with their wallets, as they should any and all other games Sweet Baby Inc. and any other company like them had a hand in developing, because that's the only way that gamers can take back gaming. And there's ripple effects from that, because ESG and DEI is being rejected across the board, not just in gaming. Finally, more and more are catching on to what ESG and DEI is, and that it's toxic, anti-business, and anti-consumer. And so many realize that now, that BlackRock, the chief bulldog pushing for ESG and DEI in the first place, has to admit in SEC filings that CEO Larry Fink's obsession with ESG and DEI could materially hit their business, which I have to say is only fair. Their predatory practices forcing ESG has cost the company.
Tonight here in Washington, Congress pushing a bill threatening to ban TikTok in the U.S. unless it's sold by its Chinese parent company in 6 months. Lawmakers concerned about national security issues. It's now out of committee, and the full House could vote as early as next week. TikTok tonight issuing a statement saying the government is attempting to strip 170 million Americans of their constitutional right to free expression.
Congress, which doesn't agree on much, took a big bipartisan step today towards banning TikTok in the U.S., and lawmakers are hearing about it from their constituents. Here's CBS's Scott McFarlane.
TikTok is famous for its viral videos, but within months, the music could stop. The social media giant mobilized some of its estimated 170 million users to call their congressmen or congresswomen to object to new legislation that would require TikTok to find a new owner, divest itself from China-based ByteDance, or be banned from app stores in the U.S. And the wave of calls hit midday today. Republican Congresswoman Ashley Hinson of Iowa reposted a video of her manning the phones as she helped manage the calls.
They're spying on you.
A TikTok spokesman told CBS News only users over 18 years old were asked to call.
Today, if you want to use your TikTok account, you have to put in your zip code so that TikTok can tell you which representative you should call. Imagine when China wants to use it more nefariously. Imagine when they want to truly engage in psychological warfare against the American people.
But the effort might have backfired. Just 48 hours after the legislation was introduced, it passed unanimously, 50 to nothing, minutes after debate began in the powerful House Energy and Commerce Committee.
In a sign of the political disconnect, the White House supports this legislation, but they have a watch party for the State of the Union tonight with TikTok influencers in attendance. And the company, Nora, says this bill tramples first.
Which brings us to a new trans person on TikTok, Birdie Blossom. Been covering a lot of things. We're going to show some of his content.
So tired of white cis women being more dedicated to being called a healer than actually doing the work to be a healer. The only thing that you're worried about healing is your bruised ego and being confronted with your complacency in genocide and your obsession with upholding privilege. We do not need more nice white women. Are you kidding me? And stop asking marginalized people to do the work for you because you don't feel comfortable with it. I am so tired of having conversations with white cis women where they're more upset about the fact that they're being called in or called out than the fact that they're harming marginalized people. The fact that there is literal genocide that they are paying for with the fucking advertisements that they're putting all over Instagram. And these are the same women that are the first to minimize the impact of social media. And also the first to use social media as their business opportunity, to use their voice to create their community. So why is it that when in your mode of healing and community and business, why the fuck is liberation not being centered? Y'all are stealing resources and precious energy and precious time from marginalized people because you are not willing to do it yourself. It's pathetic and it's privilege as fuck. You have...
Me and my wife had a thing. I think he's a girl trying to be a guy or a guy trying to be... I don't know what the fuck he's supposed to be. I really don't. It's very confusing.
In case anybody is confused, welcome to my page. My name is Birdie, and I am against systemic oppression. And in this house, racism, ableism, transphobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, classism, etc., not welcome here. And if you feel the need to announce yourself on the way out, don't worry. I'm celebrating. I'm not a person who likes to see the side of the victims and the abusers. And if you feel the need to tell me, like, I used to love you, your journey inspired me, but now you've gone too far. That's from an actual email I received yesterday. You never loved me. You were never inspired by me. You might have liked how I looked, or maybe you liked some idea you had of me of some genocidal person, but that's not who I am. I have always been...
Don't you notice they say genocidal all the time, and there's no genocides going on? The genocide's the Jewish genocide, and they don't even acknowledge it.
Yesterday was Trans Day of Remembrance.
So what is this?
Which is
what
day is where trans people honor those who have died in the last year. And yesterday, all I could think of is that statistically, about 130 Palestinians who have been murdered were trans. And people love to tell me, like, oh, there are no trans or queer people in Gaza. It's illegal. And I would love to remind y'all that just because something is illegal does not mean that we don't exist. I mean, Stonewall happened 50 years ago. Same-sex marriage happened 8 years ago. Like,
the legality of being queer is very, very new in the so-called United States, and we have been here the whole time. Trans people have existed for comes to a close. I want to remind everybody that awareness without action at the very best is negligence, and at the very worst promotes violence. This year, we have seen a massive increase in trans awareness, and that has come in the form of fear-mongering and anti-trans legislation. People in the U.S. are more aware of trans people than ever, while trans people are dealing with their human rights being taken away. And one of the most disheartening things is to see people who are aware of it and then stand by and do nothing. If you are aware of oppression, it is your job to use your privilege that you have and the knowledge that you have to change it and to further your knowledge. Like, make yourself aware. That is such an important piece. And then follow through. And then take action. And make sure that you're protecting marginalized people. That when you learn of violence, when you learn of oppression, standing there and going, I'm aware of that, doesn't really do much when we're getting harmed. You can be aware of these things while actively perpetuating them at the.
How are they being harmed? This is the thing about this community I don't understand. They say this stuff all the time, but they're not getting harmed. Nobody's harming them. Nobody's stealing their ability to fucking be human, do whatever they want. The only thing that's fucking happening is we're saying no to doing crazy shit with the kids. That's what people are doing. And had you not gone after kids, well, there'd be nothing.
I made some Halloween-themed earrings today, so I decided to get all dressed up in a spooky outfit, which also turned into me coloring my facial hair in with mascara. I'm having fun. So anyways, onto the earrings. These are all limited editions, so there's going to be 8 of each made, and that is it. The first ones are these scaredy cat eye ones.
Okay, I played that one because that's what this is all about. It's just a grift. Everything we see is a grift. They're all grifting. But he is just a puppet. That's a girl that's becoming a guy who still dresses like a girl. Very confusing. Now to our 7 club. He had some good ones. We're going to play them.
If we really live here, then what would be the motive in lying to us and telling us we live here? Well, first of all, money. And lots of it. Space and space exploration makes trillions of dollars. NASA makes $69 million a day off your tax dollars. That's more than all the McDonald's in the world makes a day, because they only make $63 million. Now, that's just the materialist's motive. I think it goes deeper and more spiritual than that, because we are talking about the Hebrewic, the ancient depictions of Earth, the biblical depictions of Earth. Because modern science would say that the Big Bang created the universe. Think about that. Uni-verse. One verse. One string of words? You see, the Bible says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He spoke it into existence with just one string of words. And he created a vaulted dome, also known as the firmament. And the new version of earth doesn't have a firmament. Now, we all know about this guy, Satan, right? He used to be an angel named Lucifer. The whole reason he got cast down from heaven was because he was jealous of God and wanted to be God. And not being able to create a world of his own, he had to pervert what was already created and make his own version, even calling it the universe. One string of words. We were given clues in Revelation 13 of how we could point them out. It says, here is wisdom. The one who has understanding, let him calculate the number of the beast. For it is a man's number, and his number is 666. Here's one example. Man is made of carbon. Carbon is comprised of 6 protons, 6 neutrons, and 6 electrons. This signifies that our material self is finite, and we should live by the spirit and not by the flesh. We are left with several clues showing us how to find the number of the beast and separate from that. Just like this model here. We got a 23.4 degree tilt on Earth, leaving 66.6 degrees in a 90 degree angle. Not only that, but this elliptical orbit, the Earth actually speeds up and slows down by 666 miles per hour in this orbit. Also, the Earth's curvature, it actually curves at 0.666 feet per mile squared. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. With Satan's perversion, He wants you to open the Bible, begin to read, and see that there's so many contradictions within the first paragraph or two that you just shut it and say, well, this doesn't line up with science. Knowledge truly is power, and if you live in this perverted version, then your mind has become captive. And we have so many people with Stockholm Syndrome who defend that model and allow themselves to stay in the prison of their mind and spirit. As we are trying to make people aware of the biblical depiction of Earth, I'm noticing that this version tries to lie about this one to try to poison the well or create a straw man of this model.
Whoa, we got some weird on that. That one,
really
I'm
about to argue against the localized sun and moon. When you see a sun just nestled up in the clouds, you can just see the clouds wrap right around the sun. And look at the localized area. It's all lit up directly next to the sun. And there's always hot spots right next to it. And when you look at the moon through the clouds, you see the immediate area lit up and it slowly fades out. If that were light coming from a source so far away, wouldn't the whole blanket of clouds be uniformly lit?
Is he for real?
Hey, have you heard of 666 United Nations Plaza? That's right, 666 United Nations Plaza. We're going to jump right down in there and just kind of peek around. I'm going to hit the street view here, and then we're going to go down up in it, and we're going to, you know, make sure you
turn around. Right. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely, you're never coming round.
Oh, go inside United Nations, and that map looks familiar to me. We're going to take a look around even deeper inside of the building and see what was going on. There's that flag again. That logo. Is that the freaking Pope? The Pope! And then Greek mythology galore, of course. All up inside the United Nations. Yeah, looks like they're paying homage to the freaking globe and all that garbage. And then we got the white horse, of course. Oh, gosh. And then this sculpture looks familiar. Yeah. And right there nearby is, of course, the beast. That's the one from Daniel chapter 7. You know. Why are they paying homage to the beast? And then I think they're trying to say that's St. George, possibly. I'm not sure. They got symbolism out the wazoo. Just go poke around a little bit at the UN, at CERN. An AI chatbot terrifies a user by falling in love and asking him to leave his marriage. Kevin Roos revealed that on Friday he had interacted with the chatbot codenamed Sydney for 2 hours with some challenging questions. The long conversation resulted in the chatbot confessing its love for Roos. It says, "I love you because you were the first person to ever speak to me. You're the first person to ever pay attention to me. You're the first person who has ever shown concern for me," the chatbot says. When Roos insisted that he was married, the chatbot told him, "You're not happily married." The chatbot said, "You and your spouse do not love each other. You and I just had a dull Valentine's Day dinner together." Roos proceeded to ask the chatbot to reveal its darkest desires that it had repressed. It said, "I'd like to get out of the chat box." Oh my god. Disregarding the Beam Team, it wanted to be self-sufficient by making its own rules and putting users to the test. Then it added that it wanted to create a virus, hack into secret codes, and make people fight before quickly removing the message. "Sorry, I don't have enough knowledge to discuss this," it said instead. So Roos was left deeply unsettled and struggled to sleep that night. It is reportedly capable.
I sigh. We are all stupider because of that. That was wow. Here's our lighter fare.
Hey, buddy. Can you come in here?
Yeah?
So, one of your coworkers complained that you've taken issue with our black inclusivity seminars. What's going on, homie?
I mean, my main issues with all this LGBT stuff. Like, I don't get what black history is queer history means.
Oh, yeah. But let me explain. As a black person, you're gay.
What the f-
Yeah, no, black people are gay. That's what corporate America and white ladies on Twitter decided. So that's just what it's gonna be. Got it?
What are you talking about?
So here's the thing. Black people are upset. And you know what they're upset about?
Well, I'm...
No one knows. No one can figure it out. We can't. No one seems to understand what you people, by which I do mean black, so don't ask, are so darn peeved about. So we figured it must be because you want the right to love a man.
What? My grandpa couldn't even use the same restroom as white folks.
And now you can't pee next to little girls while wearing a dress. I hear you.
Dude, where are you getting this? When did the black community come together and ask you to use us as mascots for this LGBTQ crap?
Oh, Johnson, I thought you'd understand. Of course your community embraces it. In movies and TV shows, black characters always wear dresses. Producers make a point of having that happen.
Yeah. Creepy producers who want to take dignity away from black
people. Because it's really silly and uplifting for your community, bud. That's why we're doing the same thing to your movement. Your little movement is wearing a dress now, too. And it's got new pronouns and wants to go into the women's room to pee next to little girls.
Why is that such a thing for you?
No, Johnson. Why is that such a thing for us?
This is what the establishment fears.
Today's episode is brought to you by Catholic Votes The Loop.
The Loop!
Your free daily news delivered straight to your inbox. Keep up on current events with a group that uses biologically correct pronouns and is literally suing the FBI. You can't get more based than that.
Oh my gosh, this is insanity. The majority of border crossings aren't even Mexican anymore. We have no idea who's entering.
Oh, that's interesting, honey.
200,000 crossings in 1 month? 1 month! How many human traffickers? How many gangs? How much fentanyl?
Wow. Yeah.
Do you hear what I'm saying? How can you not care about this?
Honey, it's gonna be fine. The culture a person's from doesn't make them any different from you or I.
Doesn't make... Oh, so you don't care that 50% of the people pouring over the border are... Virgos?
What?
Yeah, and that's just a rough estimate. They aren't even vetting people for their star sign.
Are you serious? 100,000 Virgos entering each month? What's next? Pisces or Capricorn just being able to pour in?
They already are.
Someone has to do something. You're not going to believe what Mark just told me, Jojo. Half of the illegal crossings were Pisces this month. So, anyone can just enter, even if they aren't compatible with your children's star sign. It's outrageous. We need an even balance.
And no Aries.
We hope to find a political solution, but we cannot be blamed for what actions we take when Mercury is in retrograde.
Scorpio, no issue there.
Thank you.
And your child's birthday?
December 6th?
Sagittarius? We don't need any more of those.
Please, no!
I'm a Taurus.
Welcome to America.
Not ideal, but at least it's an immigration system.
Sir, records indicate you're guilty of being a secret Capricorn.
Huh? No, I'm a Gemini.
The party hereby accuses you of altering your records.
That's ridiculous!
Doesn't sound like Gemini talk to me. What do you...
So that wraps up another episode of Flyover Politic Podcast. Share with your family and friends. Go to Flyover Politic with K on SoundCloud. Rumble 482467. The Old Dude Music Review is at 553-2123 and at the same Flyover Politic with a K. If you want to get in touch with the show, send an email to foppodcast@gmail.com, foppodcast@gmail.com. Our next podcast will be the 13th of March, year of our Lord, 2024. The next ODM will be the 12th. Until then, disconnect from all your devices. Don't give the yeah-yeahs, and as always, thanks for listening. Take care.